It's time for you to experience the passion of Edwina Patterson. She has a passion for God, a passion for sharing His love with others, and a passion for others to redeem the time. Edwina is a popular conference retreat speaker, prolific writer, radio host, and founder of Heart for the Home Ministry. Drawing from lessons she's learned and mistakes she's made, Edwina challenges, encourages, and equips you to begin today to buy back the past and focus on the future. Now, here's Edwina Patterson.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here with you. In fact, it thrills my heart to see this many women who have chosen, I was just telling Jeannie earlier, that have chosen to sign up for the Just Listen to Me, the area of communication. Do you realize, in my vast experience of 41 years of marriage, y'all, I have learned that communication is the key to maintaining a vital, exciting, ongoing, lasting marriage. If you want your marriage to last, if you want it to be exciting, if you want it to count for eternity, you are going to have to learn to communicate. You see, I was not raised in a Christian home. I was a victim of child abuse. And so when I married, I had no role models. I didn't know what to do or where to go or anything. And I read every book I could find on marriage. I went to every seminar. I listened to every tape. That was in the days of reel-to-reel tape. I listened to all of those, and I tried to learn. But I felt like a fish swimming upstream. I would learn a principle, and then I'd try to apply it to my life. And so often, I would fall flat on my face. One time when I was 10 years old in my childhood, my father wanted to do something, so he allowed my brother and sister and I to go spend the night with other people. And as I went, the girl that I spent the night with got up early the next morning, and we had to go to her church to something called VBS, Vacation Bible School. And I heard about a man who was beaten, who was humiliated, and who was spat upon, and I identified with him. I also heard that he did it just because he loved me. That's the day I gave my heart to Jesus, but I was not allowed to go back to church. So there I was. I had no role models. I didn't know what to do, but I knew how to do one thing. Lord, help me. I learned how to pray that one day, and that's what I did. I learned, being at home, a lot of negative aspects of communication. I have seen my mother and father go 6 months without speaking. 6 months. Now, they communicated with each other by, you know, the growls and the stares and the glares and the pulling the book away from one or pulling the newspaper away. They communicated, but without speaking for 6 months. So when I married, I had a lot of traits and characteristics that I had to relearn. I had to do away with all of those negative ones. I had to unlearn the negative aspects, and I had to learn positive ways to communicate. I learned, and as I watched friends around me, I learned that if you can master communication, every other problem is going to fall in place. Communication. First, communication with the father, and then communication with your husband. If you examine your marriage, if you really examine your marriage, you are going to see that almost every single problem you have is a lack of communication. So that's what I want quickly for us to look at today. How many times have you said to your husband, if you would only listen to me? We say it almost every day because in our minds, they are not listening to us. And how many times when you've been speaking with your husband, do you notice that your voice just raises and raises and you end up shouting each other and usually in an argument and you treat each other as if you're hard of hearing or deaf instead of having a problem with communication? And that's what it is. It's a problem with communication. I cut a cartoon out of a newspaper recently. I thought it was so cute. This man was in his recliner reading his newspaper, and his wife was standing there with a big sign that said, "We don't talk anymore." And that's the way it is in our lives. We seem to be so busy saying words, but we're really not speaking to each other's hearts, and we're not communicating. For example, I want to give you a classic example, and I'm going to read it so that we can get through it. Let's say there's this guy named Roger, and he's married to a woman named Elaine, and they had a wonderful whirlwind courtship. Then there was the marriage and the honeymoon, and now they're settling down into the married stage of life. And one evening after dinner in the movies, when they were driving home, A thought occurs to Elaine, and without really thinking about it, she says aloud, "Do you realize that as of tonight, we've been married 6 months?" And there's silence in the car. And to Elaine, it seems like a very loud silence. She thinks to herself, "I wonder if it bothers him that I said that. Maybe he's been feeling confined by being married. Maybe he misses going out with his buddies." And Roger's thinking, 6 months. And Elaine is thinking, "Hey, I'm not sure I don't feel confined also. Sometimes I wish I had a little more space so I'd have time to think about my life instead of having every moment filled with laundry, cooking, cleaning, and my work. What made me think I was ready for this marriage anyway? Do I really even know this person sitting on the other side of the car?" And Roger's thinking, "So that means it was, let's see, 6 months. That's February. That was right after I had the car at the dealer's. Which means, let me check the odometer. Whoa, I'm overdue for an oil change here." And Elaine is thinking, he's upset. I can see it on his face. Maybe I'm reading this completely wrong. Maybe our marriage isn't all he dreamed it would be. Maybe he has sensed, even before I sensed it, that I was feeling some reservations. Yes, I bet that's it. He's just so reluctant to say anything about his own feelings. He's afraid of being rejected. And Roger's thinking, I'm going to have them look at this transmission again. I don't care what those morons said. It's still not shifting right. And they better not try to blame it on the cold weather this time. What cold weather? It's been 87 degrees out, and this thing isn't shifting any better than a garbage truck. And I paid those incompetent thieves $600. And Elaine is thinking, he's angry. And I don't blame him. I'd be angry, too. I'm so guilty. Maybe I pushed him into this marriage. And Roger's thinking, they'll probably say it was only a 90-day warranty. That's exactly what they're going to say. And Elaine is thinking, maybe I'm too idealistic. I believe Roger was my knight in shining armor on his white horse, and now I realize he picks his teeth, snores, leaves his dirty socks all over the house. But I truly love him, and I think he really loves me. But I've hurt his feelings because of my self-centered schoolgirl romantic fantasy. And Roger's thinking, warranty? They want a warranty? I'll give them a warranty and a piece of my mind. And Elaine says out loud, Roger. And Roger says, what? Startled. And Elaine says, I feel so. And she breaks down sobbing. And Roger says, what? And Elaine says, I'm such a fool. I mean, I know there's no knight. I really know that. It's silly. There's no knight and there's no horse. Roger says, there's no horse? You may think I'm a fool, don't you? Elaine says, no, said Roger, finally glad to know the correct answer. It's just that I need some time, Elaine says. And there's a 15-second pause while Roger's thinking as fast as he can, tries to come up with a safe response. Finally, he comes up with one that he thinks might work. Yes, he says. And Elaine, deeply moved, touches his hand. Oh, Rogers, do you really feel that way, she says. And Roger says, what way? And Elaine says, that way about time. And Roger says, oh, yes. And Elaine turns to face him and gazes deeply into his eyes, causing him to become very nervous about what she might say next, especially if it involves a horse. At last, she speaks. Thank you, Roger, she says. Thank you, Roger says. And they drive home, and Elaine climbs into bed and hugs her side of the bed and silently cries herself to sleep that night, while Roger goes in and opens up a package of Doritas and watches the basketball game. Now, a tiny voice in the back of his head tells him that something major was going on in the car. But he's pretty sure there's no way he'll ever understand it, and so he just figures it's best if he doesn't think about it. Now, the next day, Elaine is going to call at least one of her friends, her best friend and maybe one or two others. And they are going to discuss this issue. And they are going to look at it from every angle. All day long. And then probably next week. And then maybe even 6 months from then, they'll do the same thing, never reaching any definite conclusions. Meanwhile, Roger, while playing racquetball one day with a mutual friend of his and Elaine's, will pause before serving and frown and say, Norm, did Elaine ever have a horse? You see, communication is a two-way process. It's not just one person's responsibility, and it's more than just speaking and hearing. 8% of your communication is verbal, 35% of it is emotional, 55% is body language, and 2% is intuitive. Now, volumes have been written. Jackie and I were talking last night. Volumes have been written about communication. You could go into any bookstore, secular or religious, and find shelves full of how-to books on communication. Then why, if all of that's written and all that information is available, why are marriages disintegrating because of a lack of communication? I think it's because we don't understand what communication is, and that's what I'd like to zero in. I'd like to share with you what communication is, and then I'd like to share with you some communication skills. And these are, I'm zeroing in on the marriage, but you can't apply them with your children or with your in-laws or whatever. Communication is not unloading all of your complaints and your disappointments and frustrations onto your husband. It is a free exchange of thoughts and ideas and opinions between two people which are willing to risk being open with each other. Communication, and this is vital for you to understand, communication is understanding that you are speaking from the person that you are and he is hearing from the person that he is. Let me tell you what I mean. Everything when you speak is filtered through all types of extraneous material. For example, what type of home was he raised in? How many brothers and sisters did he have? What type of discipline did his parents use? What was their financial position? What part of the country did they live in? All of those things, when he hears you speaking, everything you say is filtered through that. Everything you say to him is filtered through the number of children in your family, what your father did, what kind of discipline did they use. On and on like that, the same what part of country you're in. The same thing. And how often have you tried to express something to your husband and finally just given up? When he just doesn't get it, you just give up. And you usually walk away and you have two choices. You choose to file it away for a later date, or you stuff it down. Sometimes it ends in an argument. A conversation is more than words and meanings. It's also unspoken, hidden messages, which are the result of where he was raised, how many children were in the family, what type of humor they used in the family. All those that extraneous material will result in hidden messages. You and I do it all the time. Hidden messages. Coded messages may sound like one thing, but they mean quite another. We might innocently say to him, when are you going to lose some weight? To him, that's criticizing him. What we're really saying is, I'm concerned about you. It looks like, you know, there might be some high blood pressure here. We may need to start really watching what we eat. That's what you mean. That was the hidden message. To a salesperson, you might say, is this the fee you usually charge for this service? That's not what we mean. We mean, this is too high. But we say, is this the fee you usually charge for this service? There was a hidden message there. We need to verbalize our hidden messages. For example, your husband is under the sink trying to fix the leaky faucet for you, and he has the plumbing tools all around him, scattered around him, and he has the the bags that all the little wrenches and the nuts and bolts and all those things came in down there too. And he's been working there, and you know, it's uncomfortable laying on your back under the sink, under that crook in the pipe. And so here he's down there working, and you come by and you see that empty bag. And you pick it up and say, are you finished with this? He comes out, bumps his head, coming out, no, I'm not finished with it. I will clean up my mess when I'm finished with this project. All you meant was, are you finished with it? I'm packing a bag in there, a box, this mail, and I need some stuffing. But you didn't say that. And you walk away thinking, he is the biggest grouch I have ever seen. He tucks his head back under the sink and says, I cannot believe her. She's always nagging at me about picking something up. Those are those hidden messages that we must be aware of. You see, the words that proceed from our mouth have the ability to edify or encourage or build up those that we love, especially our husbands. But just one word incorrectly used can destroy a relationship. Our goal in every communication with every word that comes out of our mouth should be to present Christ's love. it should be. We should learn that, I have a sign in my kitchen that says, place a guard around my mouth, O Lord. But then I learned the most valuable lesson. It wasn't this, putting the guard over my mouth, that was important. It was the heart attitude. If I'm thinking it in my heart, it's going to spew out of my mouth. And so whether you're speaking to your husband or your children or a neighbor or your in-laws, you should always strive to use words that will edify them. Need to learn to look at the need of the moment. Is it the need of the moment for me to correct her because what she said is really wrong? Or is it, does it really matter if it was at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock? We need to look at the need of the moment. You may be in the car with a friend and she is just pouring her heart out to you over and over again and you're thinking, I cannot believe this. I don't know what to say. And all you need to say is, I understand. That must really be frustrating. That's all it took. We had that happen to us. We had neighbors. He was a great big old huge policeman and he really liked his privacy. So we had a casual acquaintance with our neighbors and one day their house burned. And they came to us to help them, call the fire department, take care of their children. My husband went out to help them fight the fire until the fire trucks got there. Their house was completely destroyed. They had to live in a hotel for 3 months. And as they were sifting through the rubble one day, this great big old gruff policeman was the only one there. And I went out to see if there was anything I could do. We had asked, can we bring food? Can we take you? Do you need clothes? We had asked many times and they'd said no. So here he is out there covered in soot from as he's going through and raking through the remains of his home. And I walk over and ask him if there's anything that I could do. And he said, well, yeah, there's a lot. We don't have a refrigerator. It gets hot. We're thirsty. We don't have any food. Man, my head was clicking. Okay, I've got an ice chest. I'll fill it up. I'll bring it over here. So I filled it up and went over there. And then he began to talk. And it was just him and me. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, where is my husband right now? He needs to be here. But this great big old policeman was talking to me, and I'm like, Lord, what do I do? What do I do? And I said, I understand. That must really be frustrating. That's all he seemed to sense that I understood where he was coming from. We need to learn to pay attention to our tone of voice. And when words that are blurted out that will later be regretted, it's a sign of a negative heart overflow. So I want to share with you the basis of good communication is attitude and expectation. That heart attitude and expectation. If you could just take on your notes there and just with a little initial, write what you are feeling that your husband, that expectations that you have of your husband right now that he's not fulfilling. Taking out the trash would be T. Reading to the children, RC. Just something to jog your memory. And think with me as we speak. Ask God to speak to your heart. What are some of the expectations that you have for your husband that he's not meeting right now? How are you handling it? What are you doing? You know what we do? We take our little tongues and we use them as scalpels and we begin to carve away at them. And we use our tongue to try to get them to meet our needs. As I began to grow in the Lord, I realized that my husband would never meet my needs. He isn't God. He can't see what's going on in my mind. He can't read my mind. He doesn't know what my heart says. He doesn't know when I really need a hug if I don't tell him. I just need it. And you know men want to fix everything. So if you say, if you tell him that you've had a rough day, he wants to tell you how to fold the clothes or how to put them in the washing machine and you set the timer and then you know to immediately put them in the dryer, etc. He wants to solve things. And many times all we need is that hug. Now, the way you choose to deal with your unmet needs and expectations will invariably affect your communication in one way or another. Usually it affects it in a negative way. And negative communication is destructive. It will destroy your marriage. So why should we develop good communication? In the winter, do you all drink hot chocolate? I do. I love hot chocolate in the wintertime. And I know, and I like it hot so I can sit for a while and curl up in a chair. And I know I can't drink it immediately because it would burn my tongue. But if I let it sit there too long, what happens? All the chocolate settles to the bottom, and then there's a bitter taste in your mouth. That is a good word picture, y'all, for communication. If you rush into communication and you begin to just talk 90 miles an hour without using some of the techniques that I'll share with you in a minute, you will have heartaches in your marriage. You'll burn your tongue. And if you wait too long after a miscommunication and do not clarify it, then a bitterness settles on your marriage and heartache occurs. If we want to learn to communicate, we must invest time. I want to encourage you right now that you will not be able to go home from here and apply every single one of these techniques in the same day. It's going to take time, like sipping that cup of hot chocolate. You must feel safe. You must become comfortable in sharing with your husband. You must become vulnerable enough to say, I need a hug. I don't need you to tell me about the timer or how to fix the cell phone. I just need you to give me a hug right now. You must be willing to remove your mask. We put on masks. We can do this job as mom to our husbands. That's what we say. We can do this, and you must be willing to remove your mask. That's what Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden. They were completely vulnerable with each other. The words that flow from your mouth, the way you stand, the way you fold your arms, the way you roll your eyes, all communicate. They all communicate. And if our goal in our marriage is to build up our marriage, not tear it down, we must learn how to communicate, this fine art of communicating. First of all, you must never use the D word, divorce. You must never threaten to leave. What God joined together, He intends to stay together. And you don't use that as a threat in your relationship. When the fact hit me right between the eyes that marriage was instituted by God. It was not dreamed up by society as much as they want you to think it is. It was designed by God. And when I was doing all that studying, and I found that the first thing that God created after He created man and after He created the world was not the school, and it was not the church. It was the husband-wife relationship. Then I realized that my marriage was a ministry. I may not ever go to China or Russia or Timbuktu to be a missionary, but the moment that that pastor said, may I introduce to you Mr. and Mrs. R.J. Patterson, I was a missionary there in my home. Where your 2 feet are planted with your children and with your husband, you are a missionary. And communication is the key to carrying out that mission field. Your home is your mission field. Now, in that mission field, you're going to have to deal with wounded spirits. What happens when you wound your husband's spirit or he wounds yours? When you say something that hurts his feelings, you may not have intended it. You really didn't understand it. I mean, you didn't realize that you were using a tone of voice that communicated to them that you were critical or anything like that. But the damage is done. The damage is done. His spirit is closed. And a crushed, closed, wounded spirit may fester for years. And it's a major destroyer of marriages. I have a friend who was having trouble in her marriage about 5 years ago. She went to a counselor, and on their very first session, the counselor said, turned to her and said, now would you share with me, in the presence of her husband, what you perceive to be the problems in this marriage? And she said, I proceeded to tell him every wrong thing my husband did. And she said, about halfway through, and then she broke down and started crying. My husband got up, pushed his chair back, and walked out. She had wounded his spirit. Now today, they're back together. But today, 5 years later, she's still crushed, and she is still working at this marriage relationship and communicating because he felt like he was a failure. Anger and pain and hurt come to reside in your husband's heart, resulting in a loss of a desire to talk to you. He could care less. And you know how you feel when he's hurt your feelings. You don't want him to talk to you. And what do you do when you accidentally, and I pray you never do it on purpose, wound your husband's spirit or say something that closes his spirit? I think, first of all, walk away from here learning to be alert when his spirit might be closing. His voice will begin to raise. He'll get louder. His hands will begin to close into a fist. And then you know his spirit is closing. Watch his body language. Many times it's as you can wound his spirit by questioning, do you really want another brownie? You mean you want another brownie? And he thinks, oh, she thinks I'm getting fat, and she's always criticizing me. And, you know, that's not what you intended at all. You may innocently ask, which day are you going to mow the lawn? You are thinking in your mind, these are one of those hidden messages, and you should verbalize your hidden message. You're thinking in your mind, okay, if he's going to mow the lawn on Tuesday, if I get out on Monday and pull those weeds up out of the flower bed and I pitch them into the yard, then he can just mow over them and I don't have to pick them up. But you didn't say that. You said, which day are you going to mow the lawn? And he thinks, she's after me again. Okay, I just can't move fast enough in this marriage. I mean, she's thinking, you know, I'm critical. I should have done it last week. Try to, I want to give you four attitudes to begin healing a wounded spirit. Number one, lower your voice. Proverbs 15:1 says, a soft answer turneth away wrath. The moment in your conversation that you realize your husband's spirit might be closing, lower your voice. In our ministry, we just have a new woman that is working for us, and she's very loud. And I told her, we have learned in our ministry that if we speak softly, we command attention. So we speak softly in our ministry. Often, just softening your tone of voice will soothe his wounded spirit. Number two, try to understand. Try to understand what he's going through. Listen carefully to what he's saying in his tone of voice. Did he lose an important account that day? Did he have a fender bender on the way home? Did he have a flat tire? Did some receptionist speak rudely to him? All those things will affect him and leave him open for that wounded spirit. Did his boss criticize him? It's important to genuinely understand the pain that they feel and how they have interpreted your offensive behavior. Ask for an interpretation of what occurred. I mean, what did I say that, what did I say that offended you? Or, you know, repeat it back to me. The goal is to listen and to understand without judging or without criticizing. Try to understand what he heard. Remember all those things in his childhood. You may have just said the same thing that his mother said when she was correcting him over and over and over again. But you didn't know that. But that triggered for him back there in the way he was raised in his home. The third one is to acknowledge that the other person has been wounded and admit any wrong in provoking that hurt. Taking ownership of whatever you did, your offensive behavior, begins to soften his spirit immediately. Number three is acknowledge that the other person has been wounded and admit any wrong in provoking that hurt. And we're going to go into this one more time at the end of this little section right here. I'm going to give you a summary of all this. Sometimes that's all it takes is just step number three. That's all it takes to open up that spirit. And number four is to seek forgiveness and wait for a response. That means to say, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? And you wait for a response. Anger on your part or his part is going to wrap a card around your heart. It's going to wrap a card around your heart that will control you and keep you in bondage. And these steps, if you use them and apply them in communicating, will break those bonds and will soften that spirit. Now, what do you do if someone refuses to forgive? If you followed all four steps, then you need to realize that perhaps the offense went deeper than you realized. It was much deeper. These steps, if you use them and apply them in communicating, will break those bonds and will soften that spirit. Now, what do you do if someone refuses to forgive? If you followed all four steps, then you need to realize that perhaps the offense went deeper than you realized. It was much deeper. And you need to give it a little while for it to soothe over. He wants to see in your life. I have a friend who's dealing with this with her daughter right now. And her daughter has wounded her spirit, so the mother's spirit. And the daughter says, I've changed. But the mother sees no change in lifestyle. She sees no change at all. So she doesn't believe when the daughter comes and says, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? She doesn't believe it because she sees no change. They may want to see a change in our lifestyle. And then you repeat those. They want to see a sincerity that we mean what we're saying. And then you repeat those four steps again. For many people, men in particular, when you say harsh words, you're attacking them. Men have two basic fears. One is to be found inadequate, and the other one is to be dominated by the woman, the fear of being dominated by a woman. God placed those there. He placed those there, I believe, for a specific reason, because he intends for them to be in the position of spiritual leader of that family. And so he placed that deep in their heart, and they don't, most of the time, don't even realize it. But if you can understand that and realize that behind your conversation, if they haven't forgiven you yet, perhaps, you know, he was felt like he was dominated, or he was afraid of being found inadequate. Now, what do you do if the situation is reversed and he's hurt your feelings and you're deeply wounded and you don't see any sincerity in his change or his lifestyle? What do you do? You forgive him. You forgive them. You may not want to. I have a precious friend at home, my prayer partner, who's living in a very difficult marriage, and her husband sometimes says some things that are very ugly. And last week she was in my home sitting on the couch next to me, and she was crying, and I was crying because of my childhood. I relate to her and what she's going through. And I wrap my arms around her neck, and she says, life's not fair. That I have to forgive him even when I see no sincerity in his asking for forgiveness. I see no sincerity there at all. And she said, life's not fair. And I wrapped my arms around her neck and I said, no, it's not. It's not fair. It's not fair that Jesus Christ had to leave the splendor and glory of heaven and come to this earth and be and suffer for you and for me. But he did it. He did it because he loved us. And that's what God expects us to do. The quicker you forgive, the less opportunity there is for strife to develop in your marriage. And you may think, but I can't forgive. I cannot forgive him. If you believe that, then you are allowing Satan to control your thoughts. Because if you are a believer in Jesus Christ, you have everything resident in your heart that will give you the strength and ability to forgive. Y'all, forgiveness does not mean that the other person is right. Remember this. Forgiveness does not mean that the other person is right. It means you're right with God. It means you're right with God. Ask God to help you focus on how much He forgives you daily for your failures and your mistakes. And I know it's going to be difficult. Can I give you a quick little summary? I know it's going to be difficult for you when you feel like you're wrong to go to Him and say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Will you forgive me? I know it's going to be difficult. But y'all, it's only hard the first time, believe me. I've had 41 years of experience. It's only hard the first time. The second time it gets a little easier. The first time you don't think you're going to get it out of your mouth. I'm finally you get I'm sorry out. That's easier. But the will you forgive me is the tough part. But the more you do it, the easier it is. We must be cognizant of our heart attitudes. We must be cognizant of the tone of voice that we use. We must be willing to acknowledge when our husband is hurt. Sometimes all we have to say is, I know that I've hurt your feelings. Will you forgive me? Then valuing him in every communication that you have with your husband, you should help him to realize his value as an individual. He has, just as he has two basic fears, he has two basic needs. One of them is to be appreciated, and the other one is to be respected / admired. This was brought home to me so graphically. I have, in the last several years, met a wonderful Jewish woman that I've fallen in love with. She was a survivor of the Holocaust. And she told me the atrocities of Auschwitz and how they did not, you know, they didn't shoot the Jews. They marched them into the gas chambers. And, you know, you've seen it. They never fought. Did you not ever think, why are they just marching in there? You know, they know what's happening, and they're just marching in there. I would be kicking and screaming and hollering. Yet, the Germans had so humiliated the Jews, they had taught them that they were of no value. They were not even worth a bullet. She was liberated at the end of the war from Auschwitz. She went to Israel on a one of those ships, and that's when England controlled Israel, and they had said no more ships can land, and hers fought. You know what they fought with? Bottles and water and rocks. That's all they had. Well, of course, they were captured, and guess what? She was put into another concentration camp, an English concentration camp. She spent a year there. When she got out, she was then, it's mandatory in Israel that you join the service. So here she was in the army, this little bitty Jewish woman. Well, she was about 21 then, little Jewish woman, and carrying this big machine gun. And one day when she was on patrol, she and six women were on patrol with about 25 men. They were captured by the Arabs. And she was put in an Arab prison camp. And she told me, now this is what I want you to take away. She told me that the Israeli government ransomed her. All six women were exchanged for 600 men, Arabs. And she said the way they performed the exchange was, here were the Israelis with all the Arab prisoners, and here were the Arabs with six little women. And 100 Arab soldiers would walk across the bridge to the Arab side, and one lone Jewish girl would walk across that bridge. She said, I knew then that somebody valued my life. I was worth 100 soldiers. Y'all, does your husband know that you value him? Does he know that you love him? Does he feel cherished or treasured? Or is your communication degrading and humiliating him? Do you choose to edify him? Let me share with you some conversational skills, because you need to master them. If you're going to, I mean, these are just basics. We're just hitting the basics right now. First of all, eye contact. Eye contact is vital. That means, y'all, you stop folding the clothes when he comes in and he speaks to you. You set aside the newspaper when he's speaking to you. You give that to your children. Are they pull on your skirt or your pant leg until you turn around? Because what do they say to you? Mom, listen to me with your eyes. Give them that eye contact. When you do not give eye contact, you're telling him he's not worth your attention. You're going to continue folding those clothes, chopping that celery. Y'all, stop chopping that celery and turn around and look at him. Learn to communicate with your eyes. Encourage him. When's the last time you winked at him? When you were dating? When's the last time you winked at him? Do your eyes light up when your husband comes into the room? With young children and toddlers, that's one of the hardest things for us. We are so worn out when our husbands come in. And we're so tired that often our eyes only light up to think, oh good, reinforcements are here. We need to make a point of realizing their value in God's eyes. Did you know your eyes are the mirrors of your soul? And I wonder what reflection your husband is seeing when he looks into your eyes. Then you need to pay attention to him. Even when we appear to be listening to him, we may be inattentive, thinking about what we're going to say next instead of listening to what our husband is saying. So often we're guilty of that. Or we think about the telephone calls that we need to return. Or we think about the other responsibilities that we have. And we need to give him our undivided attention. Understanding communication in your marriage and the importance of communication in your marriage is the key to the rest of your union. It is the key to the sexual aspect. It is the key to the financial aspect. It is the key to child rearing. It is the key to every other aspect of your marriage. And you need to concentrate on being a good listener. If you make a point of giving your husband undivided attention, he'll probably then be comfortable in sharing with you his heart. I had a friend tell me last night that she sits in a rocking chair a lot of times. And she's learned to sit there and be quiet for a minute. And her husband has started coming to her now and asking her what's going on in her life and how does she feel at this time. And I said, and how did you get to that point? And she said, I hushed. She had to be quiet. As long as she was talking, he was not going to talk. There are times, y'all, look at us. Look at me right now. 2 ears, one mouth. I mean, you know, God made no mistake. He wants us to shut our mouths and listen to them. If your husband is saying something, listen. He only has a few words, and if he's choosing to use them with you, listen. And focus not on just the words that he's saying. Focus on the emotional hidden message that he might be trying to convey. And what is your body language while you're listening? What are you doing with your arms? What's the tone of your voice as you respond to him? When we're not available to our husbands, we show them that we really don't care. Then how do you respond to him when he shared something with you? You need to respond to the message, not the hidden message. And then you need to take, you don't need to assume that you know what he said. Assumptions will get you in a lot of trouble. The words we speak convey one meaning, and the unspoken assumptions carry another, causing misunderstandings. You need to ask your husband to mirror, echo, replay, restate what he said. And then you need to restate it back to him to make sure that you understand. 9 times out of 10, you haven't. 9 times out of 10, you've not understood what he's tried to say. And develop the art of listening to his heart. If wives would listen more carefully, they would often pick up clues to their husband's emotions. I watch my husband. If I'm in an area of the house when I see him coming in, if I can watch him from the car to the house, or his shoulders stooped, he's had a bad day. I can tell that by the way his body language as he walks towards the house. Remember that when you are echoing or mirroring or replaying whatever phrase you choose to use for that method, you are listening. You're not trying to defend yourself. You're being defensive always adds fuel to the fire. So just replay that conversation. Instead of insisting upon the literal meaning, ask him if there's something else he needs to say. I want to give you some more examples of the little hidden messages because we do them all the time and we need to become alert from those. You can, and you can open the door to communication if you can learn to be alert for hidden messages. For example, you say to him, if you've been out of town, did you go to church Sunday? And he thinks, okay, she's griping again. I didn't go to church. I overslept and I didn't go. But what you're saying is I think that you need to have a spiritual growth, that you, a spiritual side of your life is important. You may say, you've had too much to drink, give me the keys to the car. And what you're saying is, I'm afraid you'll have an accident. You may say, you never listen to me. And what you're saying is, I feel like you're not listening to me and that makes me feel unimportant. Those are those hidden messages that we need to be alert to. Now, let me quickly give you a summary of this part of responding because it is so key. Number one, you need to mirror, echo, whatever phrase you're going to use. You need to listen without judging, simply repeating back what you thought you've heard him say. Then you say, did I get it right? When he responds yes, say, is there more? That leaves it open for him to share with you those hidden messages. And number two, validate him. We're going to show him value. Validate him. Say, that makes sense to me. That when I don't, whatever he has shared with you, when I don't fold your clothes, when you don't have clean clothes, when I don't have the children clean when you get home, or whatever it is, whatever has been his problem, when you say, that makes sense to me. When I don't do that, that makes you feel unloved. You don't feel like a person of worth. Now, on the other hand, when he has hurt your feelings, you say, when I'm talking and you don't listen, it tells me I don't matter to you. I'm unimportant to you. You see, we need to feel like we're not crazy, that we have these feelings and there's something wrong with me because my feelings are hurt because he never listens to me. We need to realize we are a person of worth. So you validate him and say, that makes sense to me. You make sense to me. Third, you emphasize. And you say, I understand that when I don't keep the house clean, that that makes you feel lonely or sad, or that you don't, that you're not happy in this marriage, or whatever it is. And then you can say, which one is it? How are you feeling? Well, I feel like you don't care that I'm out working all day long to provide this home for you, and you're not, I mean, you don't even care enough about it to keep it clean. You see, now you're getting to the issues. And if you believe your husband has misunderstood you, you ask him to mirror back or echo back to you what you said. Do you understand what I just said? Can you repeat it back? Can you reply? Would you reply for me, please, what I've just said? If he's angry at you, you might say, right now, I don't know what I've done or what you're angry at, but could I make one request? Would you give me a hug? Would you say one kind word? Could you affirm me right now? I'm feeling pretty bad. Then if you're angry at him, you might say, how can I say something to you in a manner which you won't withdraw? How can I say something to you in a manner with which you won't withdraw? And then ask him, once you've said it, ask him to mirror back to you what you've just said to make sure that he understands. Number four, you need to create warning flags. The next time that you sense that there's a misunderstanding has occurred, stop the conversation and try one of the following. Take a time out, but don't take a time out for more than 30 minutes. Then ask him to affirm you. You could also say, let's pray. Now, if you all are too angry with each other to pray, try repeating the Lord's Prayer together. It always begins to calm your spirit. Or you can try writing what you're trying to communicate to your husband. And then he can write, answer you and write a response also. Another communication skill that you all need to develop is to be trustworthy. Be a woman that he can trust his heart with. If he shares something with you and the next day you get on the phone and you share it with Susie and Mary and Julie and Trish and everybody else, and it gets back to him, he is not going to confide in you again, and he will begin to diminish his communication with you because he'll feel like he needs to protect himself. Nothing will hamper our communication quicker than to have a confidence betrayed and broadcast outside your marriage. You need to avoid flippant answers. Do you know what flippant answers are? It says, I'm not really interested in what you're saying, or I'm too busy to listen to what you say. If you really want to learn to speak with your husband and communicate with your husband, you're going to have to learn to use word pictures. Men, and I'm going to skim through the rest of this because of our time is gone. Men speak a language of the head, which is, I can tell you what kind of shingles to put on the roof, how high to cut the lawn, how to fix this machine, what kind of gas to put in your car, those things. Those are facts. When they finish sharing facts, they finish speaking, y'all. women speak with the language of the heart. We can share about our dreams and our opinions and our feelings, and we can share on and on and on and on. And don't listen just enough in the conversation with your husband to keep the conversation going. Listen to what he says. Learn to be interested in his job and what he's doing. You need to keep in mind the differences. If you want to communicate, really communicate with your husband, you need to keep in mind that you're trying to... If you all went and began to take Spanish or Russian or German, you'd spend hours learning how to conjugate verbs. You'd go to lab classes. You'd take years before you become fluent in it. And we cannot walk out of here and think that we can learn this overnight. You have to begin to apply it. Words that communicate. Quickly, let me share with you that words that communicate are word pictures. That's what storytellers use. They use word pictures. Max Lucado is a wonderful storyteller. He uses word pictures. What are word pictures? If you're facing a difficult situation that he's encouraged you in, you might comment, "Your encouragement makes me feel accepted and safe. You're my strong anchor in this storm." He knows. If you're beat up and worn out from a day, you've had a toddler that's had a virus and he has been vomiting all day and little Tommy is teething and has a temperature and you haven't had time to even get the breakfast dishes off the table, and he comes in from work, I mean, and he's oblivious to everything and says, "And what kind of day did you have?" You probably want to pick up those dishes and throw them at him. If you say, "What kind of day did I have? Let me tell you what kind of day I've had. I've cleaned vomit. I've changed, you know, I've tried to get this temperature down," and you went, talk to the doctor three times, and you go, I mean, it's going in one ear and out the other. You are not communicating in a way that he can understand. You need to take and say, when he says, "And what kind of day did you have?" "Well, let me tell you, I feel like the football that was used in the Super Bowl." He knows immediately. You feel beat up. If he's always late for dinner, and here you have this beautiful dinner, and you've worked hard getting it on the table so that it'll be hot and on time, and he's always late, repeatedly, you might tell him the story of a man who went fishing, and he had all this wonderful fishing equipment, went out and baited the hook, got it in, big one, hooked it, and he was reeling it in, and he got right there where it broke the surface, and you could see how big it was, and the fish got away. And how disappointed and hurt the fisherman felt. And he'll understand. You say, "That's the way I feel. I've been cooking all day long on whatever it is, and you're not even here to enjoy it." There are all kinds of word pictures. Sports, hunting, computers. I had one woman come up to me one time when I was speaking on this subject and say to me that my husband doesn't like sports. He doesn't like computers. He doesn't like... And she went through the whole list of, "What does he like?" She said, "Well, maybe books." I said, "Telling you feel like that rare book that he was so excited that he found at the store and he purchased and he brought it home and he had dreams of reading it and cherishing it, and he set it on the shelf and it's been sitting there the whole time. And you feel like that book." He'll understand that you've taken his head knowledge and turned it into heart knowledge that he can understand. There are a million of them that I could share with you. We do not have time to do that. You need to be creative. Oh, I wanted to get into giving constructive criticism because y'all need to know that. Do we have time? Oh, good. Okay, let's see if I can speak in shorthand here. We all know that our husbands are going to, there are going to be things about our husbands that irritate us. Agreed? Yes. So, constructive criticism can be shared in love and received in love, and there are no hurt feelings. Let me tell you how to do it. Number one, first of all, you must remember that it's a two-way street. When you begin to offer criticism to your husband, you leave yourself open, y'all, for him to come back and say to you, you know, about your habits that bug him. So, number one, you need to choose your setting. Choose your setting. Is your husband starving? Y'all, that's not the time. I have learned with my husband. I learned with my son as he was walking home from kindergarten. I had to meet him halfway with a snack or he was a bear. Now his little daughter, my daughter-in-law says that she picks her up from kindergarten. She has to have a snack in the car. And I said, she comes by it naturally. But if he's worn out after a long day at work, or if he's worn out after a day of yard work, that's not the time. So choose your setting. Number two, all criticism should occur in a private, secure place. Go to your bedroom and shut the door, or wait till the children are outside playing. But never, never, never criticize or belittle your husband in the presence of others, even in a teasing manner. Even in a teasing manner. Number three, do not offer more than one suggestion at a time. You know what we do? We offer that criticism, that suggestion, and then we say, oh, by the way, or did you realize that in addition, and we stack one criticism on after another criticism, and our husbands think, well, why should I even try? I mean, there's so much to change that she's critical of. Why should I even try? And number four, sandwich criticism in between compliments. If you go to your husband and you say, I watched you playing with Tommy this afternoon and how patient you were as you taught him how to swing that bat and keep his eye on the ball. You all spent hours after that, and my heart was touched. His spirit is open. Then you can say, can I share this with you? And say whatever it is softly. If you could just help me with the baby this afternoon, or what, you know, if you could just give me a little more help with the baby, you know, you've been neglecting that area, if I could just have a little help, whatever it is. And then you come back immediately before he has time to respond and say, thank you so much for doing the lawn yesterday before the Bible class came over here for coffee. Whatever it is, you sandwich that criticism in between two compliments. And then his spirit will stay open. Y'all, if I could just say one thing, your husband is going to have, he's going to fall short. He's going to have faults. But love accepts many imperfections. I heard an old saying which goes, adultery slays its thousands and silence its 10,000. Bricks of silence in a marriage will destroy it. It will destroy it. As I was doing research for this book, this blue book, this marriage manual, over and over again, as I was going through the divorce records that I was researching, I found over and over again, we stopped talking. We stopped talking. It is my prayer that you will go from here and you'll be encouraged. You can look, if I can learn it, you can learn it. I had no role models. If I can, you can. Could I close in prayer, please? Father, I just praise your name for women who are interested in developing communication skills that will enhance their marriage. I ask, Father, that you would guide each one, that you would encourage each one. Don't let them think that they have to apply all of this at one day. Let them begin one day at a time. I ask, Father, that you would remind them of what they've heard, and that you, Father, I know you're walking beside them every step of the way. Let them realize that too. Thank you, Father. I ask you to bless each woman here. In Jesus' name, amen.